This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Jennifer Simonetti Bryan. How are you, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
Good. We had you on the show last week, and this week we want to talk a wee bit more about the old MW exam, but also really talk about it compared to, say, the diploma, the WST diploma tasting exam. And the level 4 diploma tasting exam is very similar to the level 3 tasting exam, except for in the level 4 tasting exam, you have to do all the levels, the acidities and the sugar levels and all that sort of stuff, the color. But in the diploma, you actually have to start identifying or trying to identify the wine or flights of the wines. And from what we were saying last week, in the exam for the Master of Wines, it's all about what is that wine, or what's the marketing position for that wine, or the grape variety, the color, the country, the region. Hopefully they can tell that they're all reds or whites.
That's hope. Yeah.
So tasting technique. Obviously, the way you described how you write a tasting note for Master of Wine, it seemed to be that you didn't really write a tasting note. It seemed to be you wrote an argument about why you thought a wine was something.
Well, yeah, no, maybe I gave the wrong impression there. I take a really detailed tasting notes. You kind of have to. Although having said that, there are different techniques that you can use to pass the exam. Me personally, I wrote detailed notes, but you have to write them quickly because you only have 11 minutes per wine to write your tasting notes and then write your essay. So the shorter you can make that, the better. But there are different techniques. So there's one technique that's called the Captain Obvious method. The Captain Obvious method is what my mentor in the program, Dr. Patrick Farrell, MW, he taught me this method where he was like, all right, so Chablis, so he's just going to write down yeasty, green apples, butter. And he only wrote down the things that were obvious to him because as soon as he tasted it, he had instant recognition of what it was. So he didn't need that many notes. Unfortunately, I'm a mere mortal. I couldn't do that. I didn't have the mental recognition that he had. But there are people who do have this instant recognition. So for them, that kind of really quick jot down a few things, and then you can emote later on because you know what it is. That's the Captain Obvious method. And then the WSET method is really more of the long form sentences and drawing it out. But that's too much time for the MW. Every word takes 3 seconds to write. And of course, I had to calculate that because you only have so much time. So for me, I switched to a grid system. And a grid system is where, I mean, if you can think of a road grid or a map or a graph paper, and on one side of the paper, so let's say down the left-hand column, you write 1 through 12. And up at the top of your paper, at the top of each individual column, you're writing color, aroma, body, acid, alcohol, tannin, and then your quality parameters. And then in the middle, I would write numbers to represent certain things. So it's really just a shorthand. So let's say if it was a aromatic intensity that was really high, I would write a 5 for high, 0 for none, 1 for low. So I didn't have to worry about writing a lot of words. So I could really condense it into less than 2 minutes of tasting through 12 wines and then identifying them really quickly. So
2 minutes for 12 wines.
Oh, no, no, no. 2 minutes per wine. So it's 20. Yeah, I know. No,
impressive.
I know. No. So it's 2 minutes per wine. But the less you can do, the better. It's usually 24 minutes in the beginning of a 12 wine exam, which you do all in the beginning. So it is a bit of a time crunch, I'll tell you, especially if you have a wine, you're like, I don't know what this is. Some of them are much easier. The bankers, like Fino Sherry, Moscato d'Asti, those are a little bit easier to identify. But then you've got something you're like, oh, no. And then you're just minutes are ticking away and you have to make a decision quick and just move on.
So the grid system is, it's about getting the information down so that then you can look at that information and go, well, these three wines, they want to tell me the grape variety. They're all the same grape variety. What have we got here? Okay, we've got Chardonnay.
Where is the evidence?
Yeah.
Right. Where is the evidence amongst these? Let's say, so in a grid.
Do you write down aromas as well in your grid?
Yep. Aromas, flavors. Yep. Tannins, texture, anything that you can fit in there. One of the drawbacks of the grid system is people will say it takes too long to write or it takes too much time to write. You don't have to fill in everything. It's almost a blend. Once you get to like the mastery level, it's almost like this blend of grid system and Captain Obvious where you, when you're first learning and you're first as an MW candidate, you want to make understanding as many markers as possible so you can notice patterns along the way. So for example, I kept missing Grenache or Garnacha. I kept missing that in blind tastings. And it was only until I put grids together or tasting notes together, looking at them side by side going, oh, wow, it's low acid, but I keep missing that. So that's where I notice things along the way. And that is absolutely one of the biggest mistakes I made as a WSET student and as an NW candidate. It just clicked one day where I was like, I should be keeping my tasting notes. I should look at them, not just throw them away after I'm tasting them. So, because they do reveal quite a bit about where your palate is and where your calibration is for certain things.
Is calibration important? Because it is, calibration is what it's all about at level three and level four is, well, not all about, but certainly at level three, it's a huge amount of your final mark is all about your calibration, getting your calibration right. Level four, there's a lot of marks in there. Most of the marks are for calibration.
Exactly.
And it sounds like you can lose marks if your calibration is wrong, but you don't necessarily get marks for calibration. Is that?
In the MW exam, you can always hedge your bets because someone will say, oh, this is a full body Pinot Noir. Well, this is a full bodied wine. It's like, well, no, this is a Pinot Noir. Pinot Noirs are generally never full bodied. So you could say full bodied for a Pinot Noir, but it's never going to reach the status of, let's say, you know, a Pauillac. It's just not going to, it's not going to be that full body. So your calibration has to use the full range. And what most people do, especially if they're only tasting one individual wine a night, or if they're only they taste their usual suspects, they taste the same wines over and over again and don't expand their experience, they narrow their calibration band, you know, and even with things like tannin, use the full range. You know, if it's high tannin, if you say it's high tannin, it better be the same level as Nebbiolo, right? So, or a Tannat. You know, so like that's what we're talking about. So I think that's where a lot of candidates really mess up with calibration. But there are some solutions to that. You can do component tastings. Have you done one of those before?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, maybe you've done it and I call it something different. Component tasting is where you take one wine, let's say Pinot Grigio, and I use Pinot Grigio because it's middle of the road everything, right? Medium acid, medium body, medium aromatic intensity. And you take that wine, you have five glasses. First glass is just the Pinot Grigio and nothing's done to it. It's your control wine. In glass number two, you add a little bit of sugar.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The next glass, you add a little bit of malic acid, which you can get like on Amazon or at a wine supply store. And then you can add tannin powder to another one and you add a little bit of alcohol. So you're teaching your palate what to look for in a component tasting. That's one way to help with calibration. So you know what to look for.
Just to recap on that, that is literally taking the same wine, tasting it. And all you're doing is seeing small differences between each wine.
That's right.
To identify. And do you need, how much experience do you need in terms of knowing how much malic acid to put in, you know, or how much sugar,
you can, you know? Yeah, you can do what I did and just, you know, fudge your way through it. And the more you add, the more you're going to notice. So over time, if you want to get better and better, you just decrease the amount until you're like, oh, I can still tell that's higher acid than this, or I can still tell that this is higher alcohol than this. But the next step after that is to, let's say, take wines from the maybe the same grape but have different alcohol levels. So taking, let's say, a Pinot Noir from Burgundy at 12.5%, and you go find a California Pinot Noir at 14.5%. And so you are able to, like, all right, I'm only, my intent here is only focusing on alcohol. I want to feel the difference between these two. So you can take different extremes. I mean, you can start out even with tannin, like a Beaujolais or a Gamay Beaujolais. So it's low tannin, and get a Nebbiolo. Those are the extremes, but over time you can narrow that band of calibration. So you're like, okay, this is medium tannin. This is medium high tannin. So that's a good way to calibrate for that.
That's a good tool anyway, isn't it? Components. I've sort of, some of the things I do, which is a little bit heinous, is if you get yourself a tannic red and you put a little bit of sugar in it, and you can show people how all of a sudden it changes the, drops the tannin levels, brings up the fruit, all
round
that type
mouth
of thing.
Feel.
Yeah. It fills out the mouth body, all that type of thing. And you can really see the changes with that. So we do something like that in some of our tastings, but we don't, I've never done it as a single bottle and just gone for 12 different examples of the same one with just slight tweaks.
Exactly.
That'd be quite good, actually, isn't it? You sort of set them all up. You do 5 or 6 different examples, then you mix them up so you don't know which one's which. And then you have to work out, well, which one's got the slightly higher acidity, which one's got the slightly higher alcohol, which one's, and then you can really,
trying to train your palate. You're like Rocky, but for palate. So,
and the nice thing really is you can put in quite a bit to start off with. And then as you get better and better and better, you put less and less and less in until you're starting to get better and better and better at. And that's a really good way of sharpening your palate. I don't think it's appropriate for, say, a level 3 student, but certainly I can see why a diploma student, but certainly a master of wine student, that'd be a very, very good tool for that.
Yeah, I did that. I did component tasting and studying for WSET diploma. So it really helped out a lot with that, because every once in a while I'd be like, I would get what I call mediumitis. So I'm afraid to say it's high tannin, I'm afraid to say it's low acid. So a component tasting can help you be able to say, okay, high tannin, okay, low tannin. Because you're so scared you're going to get it wrong that everything ends up being medium plus or medium minus. So you got to get away from that a little bit.
Yeah, Mr. Mediumitis. Cool. Okay. Now that's pretty cool. How else do they differ, the exams or the tasting techniques between the two?
The tasting techniques. Well, you can't, like I said, you've got the Captain Obvious method, you got the grid system. Some people do what I call, or it's known as the cross. I first learned of this from Anthony Moss. So he has the Moss cross. That's how he studied. But you can, whatever you
Just do it on your
scrap paper. Just get what you need down in order to be able to create your arguments. But if you don't put enough down on your scrap paper, you end up having to taste the wine more. And because you have 12 wines, you can get palate fatigue really quickly. And you've got 3 days of exams. So you have to really minimize the number of times you're tasting so that you're still on point, because you will get tired after a while. So that for the diploma, it's 12 wines, right?
Yeah. So it's not so bad. What's the Moss Cross?
The Moss Cross. Yeah. So the Moss Cross, you write an X in your paper. So let's say you have a flight of 4 wines. You would, on your scrap paper, you would put 4 X's. And it's a form of grid, but it's just changing format. So they might put body near in the middle of one part of the X and flavors on another part of the X. It's what helped him, having, let's say, the structure in the middle and then flavors on the outside and other types of conclusions. And honestly, I don't know if I quite understand it myself. I haven't particularly used it, but I know there's a lot of students out there who use it and swear by it.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any other techniques people use that you're aware of?
Not, those are the main 4. But when I was going from diploma to MW, I was writing out those long form sentences. This is a pale white wine with straw yellow and light green reflections. That took way too much time. So I needed to condense it for timing purposes. So that ends up forcing you to change your tasting format.
Yeah. Do you find that students are time compressed? Is it quite a time compressed exam?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, the more time you have, like if it's 2 minutes to taste one wine and you have 9 minutes to write up your argument, because it's points based, the more time you get to write, the more opportunity you can put points down. So that's why you're trying to shave off the tasting as much as possible. One of the things that I usually recommend to students when they're tasting on their own is tasting in those flights, but tasting with intention. So let me ask you a question. If you wanted to identify Syrah markers, like particular color, aroma, structural markers that only point to Syrah, which three wines would you say put together to taste?
If I was to do that, I'd go for something like, obviously a Northern Rhone as a cool climate. You might go for a Barossa Shiraz because you want to have the warm climate. Mm-hmm. And then those two would be high quality. So I'd go for an entry level Syrah of some sorts from either a warm or moderate, not a cool, or not cool, it's never cool, but from a moderate climate or a warm climate.
Yeah. So what you just described is actually an origin marker tasting. And or a quality marker tasting. It's counterintuitive. So if I wanted to identify Syrah markers and really identify what makes the Syrah Syrah, I wouldn't taste three Syrahs together. I would actually pit Syrah next to Merlot or next to Cabernet Sauvignon, because it's like putting two different colors
from a similar climate range. So
from a similar climate range to be able to reduce all the other variables, the only thing that's different is grape variety, so that the Syrah, what makes Syrah Syrah, stands out more, right? So and that's one of the things I try to teach students, because it is so counterintuitive. I did the same thing. It's like, oh, I want to see what these have in common. Well, it's much more difficult to see what a Barossa Shiraz and a Northern Rhone Syrah have in common than it is to say, let's pit a Bordeaux next to a Northern Rhone Syrah, right? So pitting those two against each other, you'll see a lot more differences than you will if you had three Syrahs together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
Comparing and contrasting.
Yeah. You're trying to compare and contrast what you're going to get. If you're after an exam, the grape variety, you need to compare it to other grape varieties. If you're trying to do vintage, you need to compare it to different vintages.
If you want to know what a bad vintage is, put it up against a good vintage so that it really tells you what those differences are. So if you wanted to do an origin tasting, you do it exactly what you just said. You know, you will really taste warm climate if you put Northern Rhone versus a Barossa Shiraz. You will really be able to taste that geographical and climatic difference there.
All right then, Jennifer, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for having me.